All right, happy Monday, people. This is Go From There, Trevante Jaramillo. I'm kind of freaking out. I'm sitting here with Macklemore hair, and I'm shaking because I'm talking to Big J Okerson on the phone right now. How's it going, man?
What's up, brother? I'm about to calm me down, like a nervous I feel like you're like a hostage. You're shaking?
Yeah, I'm shaking a little bit. I'm wearing an orange jumpsuit. this is really weird. Jay just informed
me it's like confronting your rapist.
This is really weird, you know. I feel like I should be holding a sign up, you know, in front of an Iraqi flag or something. Jay just informed me that he's actually on the road, and this is actually going to be kind of a ripoff of Jerry Seinfeld. What would you call this? That one's, what is it, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee or something like that?
Getting Gas in Comedians' Cars.
let me just get this out of the way. I'm a huge fan. That's why I'm so nervous. The first time I think I'm trying to figure out, like, I was really doing a lot of research this last week, and I was trying to figure out the first place. Jesus Christ, listen to me. The first place I saw you. I'm gonna go with Mayhem 2011 or 2012 in Denver, Colorado. Where you were?
Oh, is this the Ask Gary Amphitheater?
yeah. You were the touring MC. What did you have? You had Rob Zombie, Lamb of God, Five Finger Death Punch, and you know when you came out,
Korn,
I was like,
the boys from Korn.
That's right. Yeah. When you came out, I was like, holy shit, it's that guy, and I completely forgot your name, but I had seen you before, like on TV, maybe Z-Rock. Something I had seen you before, and I'm like, this guy's fucking funny, and I was so excited that you came out. Like, what was that all about? Like, what was that like? I know that you took the gig right away, but like, was it cool? Was it hard?
It was. Well, I looked at it. Mayhem Fest actually was the second tour I had done in a row. I went out on the Jägermeister music tour with just Korn and a band called 2 Cents. Who are from Los Angeles, and it was a local opener, but they played these. It was called the Korn's Ballroom Blitz Tour, so we would play these oddly small venues for metal, especially, you know. Like, I think in Albany, New York, we ended up playing. It was like a fucking sports bar almost. It was like they have Korn in these venues. It was so amazing. So I kind of got used to doing stand up. In the environment of like these rock bands in a much more comedy conducive environment, you know, where I was able to like, kind of work with the crowd a little more. They're kind of right on top of you, you know?
Right.
And then in a small rock club that we were playing. So then when I went out in San Bernardino, California was the first date of Mayhem Fest, I was definitely like, I wasn't nervous. Nervous is the wrong word because like, to me, the story of 25,000 people booing me or whatever would be hilarious. I would be fine with 25,000 boos. My concern was I'd be talking to nobody. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, nobody would be listening at all.
That's a tough hustle, too. And, like, I mean, obviously, they didn't say anything. Like, had we known that you were going to be in there, like, if they just stuck your name on the poster somewhere, like, we'd have been like, oh, shit, this is going to be awesome. But they kind of, you know, surprise everybody with you. But, I mean, what I remember, I mean, first joke everyone was in. So I just think that's super cool that you got to, you know, or that you have the ability to grab that many people in one joke.
Well, I'm such a fan of so many of those bands too. You know, I did two summers ago. I might be going again. I'm gonna be going again this year on Mayhem Fest again, which is I'm actually speaking to the guy tonight, but. I did it 2 summers ago. I did it with Slipknot and Slayer, and that year I did just the East Coast leg of it, which was a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's like, well, so getting to do the one with, like, Rob Zombie, yeah, they didn't, like, really list me at all, and I was kind of under the radar thing for them, but it worked. You know, for some weird reason, I go out there before Rob Zombie was my main time on stage, and, I mean, they would drop a curtain in front of me while I was talking to set up. Obviously, there was like all these like adversarial situations for comedy. But you know, I get it. It wasn't like, you know, the dreamiest situation of doing comedy.
Yeah,
that said, it's like
I remember.
That said, it is what
You had come out and they had you like on the way edge of the stage, kind of. And I think like
yeah, because they had a big top up. Yeah,
yeah. And it was weird because like our seats were like for like if you were looking out, we were on like upper right. And this is like the Fiddler's Green outdoor deal. And it's funny because we could kind of see like over the tarps of like the band gear and all that stuff. And you were like way over there. And there's like a little black curtain behind you. And I'm like, oh shit. Like I knew you were funny, but it's not like, I mean, that's ridiculous for me to say that I was like concerned, you know, but I'm like, oh man, this is going to be rough. And like literally, I mean, obviously I'm not a comic, but I do have a bunch of friends locally that, you know, they're trying to work at it. And, you know,
right.
I understand like when, you know, something eats shit or something like the venues, like there's no venues for comedy. They have like, you know, the cliche like Chinese restaurant nights and all that type of shit. And those are the ones that are always just set up for an awful time, you know?
But you know, it's funny, like all those, like, you know, I'm not sure how much prepared I was to do like those kind of venues and things like that, performing even in like big, you know, going on. I went to David Tell's Insomniac tour years ago with him on the East Coast and, you know, performing for like 3,000 seaters and opening for Audie Lang and doing gigs like that and performing in front of these, like, you know, these big theaters. Preparing for comedy is like, it's not actually what the thing that's most training you for that kind of an environment. I think the best training I got for handling that environment, it was like open mic nights and the comedy night at the Chinese restaurant, as you're saying, and all that kind of shit. It's like going into those real, like, you know, like hard knuckle fight, like situations where the crowd's almost like, fuck this show, this is stupid, and right. What did I pay $5 to see this nonsense for? And like, you know, just that kind of aggressive, you know, shittiness of an audience is much more preparing you to go in front of 25,000 people where, and what I would do, I was so like obsessively focused on like the people, because all I could see really, you know, as far as like faces was like, you know, the people in the pit,
right.
You know?
Right.
And, I would always try to find, like, the one guy who was just, like... Because there's always some, you know, asshole or just drunken jerk-off or, like, some white supremacist guy who's just, like, well, I'm, you know, up there talking and trying to make them laugh, you know, and they're like, just give me the finger. And I get it, you know. I get it's, like, a metal festival. It's not there for comedy. But I would hope for that guy to actually happen every day, because then I would just kind of go at that guy.
Sure.
And just, like, shit all over him. And it was a way to, like, kind of turn... It was a way to kind of turn the focus, and then what you start seeing is the people surrounding him, and it was kind of like it would spread outward as the kind of idea of like, well, nobody else wanted to be called out like that, because no matter what, I have a microphone, so I can, even if they couldn't see the guy on the lawn, I can describe him, you know what I mean, and like enough that like that they're laughing at him, and there's nobody wants to be laughed at by 25,000 people, you know, sure, so yeah. It was like it was all kind of a game to like kind of get the find the asshole and expose them. And then also the fact that I went on stage two times before I would do the actual, like, you know, the actual like 10-15 minute set before Rob Zombie. I would open up the main stage. I also opened up the small stages at like noon or like whatever it was, 1 p.m.
Okay.
And so by the time I got to that. You know, right before Rob Zombie, and, you know, everyone's in their seat, 20-some thousand people in their seats. By the time I get there, they already, a portion of the audience was already kind of comfortable with me. Like, they kind of knew what I'm doing, and then I'm there. Like, you know, I'd already gone out, you know, the small stage was great to open up with that, because they were so amped up that the show was getting ready to start in any capacity, that they're in really good spirits. No, there was never too much, like, fuck yous coming from the audience at that point.
Right.
At that point, they're like, you know, I would just try to cheerlead. I would start announcing all the bands that were going to be there. And then I'd make fun of fat women, tell some kiddies going to see titties, and then get out of there. But it made them laugh, and it was kind of quick, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, get through that real quick. And then I'd open up the main stage, kind of, you know, give them a round of applause for what they seen so far and what's still coming up on the main stage, and then I'd ask another kid if he saw titties. If not, I'd try to get some girl to show her titties. I'd point out something about black people being there. I didn't really want to plan. It was more just kind of like, you know, I'll fuck with him. But just like, and just enough to get some laughs that, like, But it was great about those. I only had to go. There's no pressure. I really only had to go out there for like 4 or 5 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's a target-rich environment. Like you can look around and pretty much see. I mean, anything. I mean, I remember that.
Yeah, for 5 minutes, you could be like, "Dude, is this your girlfriend?" Like, wow, that she is way out of your league. Like, you must have a huge dick or a small dick, whatever. You know,
yeah.
Just go at them and figure out what I was going to say. Kind of on the fly. But what was good about that is by the time I went out there the third time, like, they kind of knew what was coming. And then I just had some, like, longer form stories and, you know, and it was all just gross. I used to love the the message board on Mayhem Fest. Like, I would go read it because it was so funny. Like, the people that liked me were so, you know, there's so much music happening, so I get it. But the people that liked me were so few and far between, like, posting, you know, on that message board.
Yeah.
But the people that hate, you know, of course, come out of the woodwork. Sure. So one of them was so funny. It was like, the complaint was so, you almost want to, like, grab him by the ears and be like, no, you're wrong about this. Like, this is where you're wrong. It was like, it's fucking Mayhem Fest, you know what I mean? And it was like, I brought my mother to Mayhem Fest with me today.
Oh, fuck
and
you.
How appalled I was to hear that asshole get on stage and start talking about, you know, watching a girl get, you know, blah, 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 or her pussy eaten by a dog, and, you know, something about black dicks, and
he threatened to punch my mother.
Yeah, he's kind of like, it's Mayhem Fest, you dumb twat. Like, why would you? I mean, I would never reply to a message board, but she's kind of like, I think that's what she was getting. She's like, I mean, time and a place, dude. Time and a place. I guess implying, like a metal festival is not the time and place to talk about fucking finger banging chicks. Like, there's literally chicks being finger banging
exactly,
while
yeah.
I'm doing that show.
Yeah. I have my hand up my chick's skirt right now, but I'm offended by you talking about it. Ah, fucking dicks.
Man, it was so bizarre. And then it was also, it was funny because, like, you know, every day I said I would go out there, and if I saw any black people in the audience, I would always point it out. Because it was like a, and it was funny. It was a good excuse to do, like, you know, big black dick jokes, and then I can make some black jokes, and then also tie it in by just being like, you know, how fucking cool it is, though, that, like, you know, metal has evolved to a point where it is. Like, everyone's here, you know what I mean? There's, like, Latino and black and all kinds, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different kinds of people here. And then, like, you know, and that message board would either read, like, you know, some people would be like, oh my God, like, stop kissing all that black ass. Like, you know, like, fucking, like, nigger lover. It's, oh, these guys are nigger lover. And then the next person would be like, hey, man, why don't you leave black people alone? They're just there trying to enjoy themselves, you know.
Oh, Jesus like, Christ.
And it's like, either way, you can say, damned if you do, damned if you don't, which is kind of fucking. Sure. In its own right, pretty hilarious. Because
I'm gonna tell you a little story. I'm gonna ask you a question at the end of it. At that show, during Rob Zombie, like that's a long day, man. The Mayhem Fest is a tough hustle. It's hot as balls. You know, it starts at like noon, and I mean, just 30 bands. It's crazy. You know, so we were finally right. in the main stage area, and Rob Zombie was like maybe two songs in, and I'm like, I'm dying. I need some water. I need a piss. So I take off, and I'm with a group of friends that they're way bigger metalheads than I am. Like, they know every, like, I had just gotten into Lamb of God. I knew some Rob Zombie, knew nothing to Five Finger Death Punch.
Right.
Like, you know, they know a lot more than me. Well, I get up to go get a bottle of water, and I'm
watching. I can't believe you don't know all Five Finger Death Punch. Isn't that Hometown Heroes?
My crew never embraced those guys. They think they're pussies, so. I mean, I don't really give a shit.
I think the lead singer still lives in Denver.
Yeah. We tweet each other every once in a while. He seems like a nice guy. I've thought about hitting him up, but I don't listen to his shit, so I feel like I shouldn't, you know. But I'm walking through the portal, and there's a security guy and another guy standing there, and they're just yapping there watching the show. And I'm like, holy shit, it's John Campbell from Lamb of God, their bass player. And he's just shooting the shit with this security guy, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm like, I didn't even say his name. I'm like, you guys were fucking awesome. And the security guy was like, you're in one of the bands? Like, he didn't even know who he was talking with. So I'm like, can I get a picture with you? And he was just cool as shit. You know, he was mad because I had the new iPhone and he couldn't find one yet. Some dumb shit, you know. It was just cool. Like, did you have any, like really awesome, glaring memories from any of these tours? Because I know you're a big fan of all these guys, but was there anything that like really stuck out?
Yeah, well, you know, the Korn guys were awesome to me, so because I did that tour with them first, and then on that tour, I remember Jonathan Davis asking me why whenever he sees me, I'm always alone. And I was like, because I'm not a band. I'm like, I'm just by myself on the tour. And he's like, well, you roll with us now, which I thought was just like a nice thing.
Oh, that is cool.
And those guys, and I've stayed so tight with those guys since. I mean, every time they're in town, you know, we hang out, I go see them and stuff. The Lamb of God thing, ironically enough, I really got along with Randy, man. I was so bummed what happened to him. You know, we were supposed to do a cruise ship together.
Oh, right, right.
The
Prague thing.
They were doing a Mayhem Fest cruise. They ended up having to cancel because ticket sales went to shit because he got arrested in the Czech Republic.
Or Czech Republic, yeah, yeah. Yeah, what a crazy story, no?
Crazy story, but what is why me and him ended up getting along so well was the first night or the night before Mayhem Fest started, everyone met up in a hotel in Los Angeles, like near San Bernardino, this hotel, and everyone was there, and they were getting on the buses in the morning, and we get to the hotel, and they wanted me to do a comedy show like in the bar area of the hotel, but everyone's there, and I knew it was going to be a bad situation. I brought another comic to open for me, and he just ate shit, like they just chewed him to pieces, and so I went up there and just started shitting on everybody. And, and again, at this point, I don't know who anybody is. And especially bands like Lamb of God, I know the music more than I could point these guys down the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
At the time. And there's some dude where, you know, again, it's also the interesting thing about, you know, everyone from me to the guy who has to wake up at 5 a.m. and start building a stage to the guy who's, you know, the most famous singer in a band. Everyone kind of looks the same, or at least in the same world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so there's a dude with long hair and a ponytail. He's got a hot chick with him, but he's like, I don't recognize him at all. He's wearing like a Kango hat, and he seems pretty drunk, and he's just being like, so I'm like, you're making fun of people. I'm actually yelling at them, but like, you know, funny. And I'm too funny, but I'm just going to like yell at how mean they were to the other comic, and you know, it's like, you guys are fucking performers, you jerk offs. Like, what kind of fucking shit? And I'm being funny. You know, I'm using funny words, but I'm giving them a talking to.
Right, right.
And this guy goes over and unplugs my microphone. And then my manager who was there, my manager at the time, I should say, who got me this gigs. He's a music. He dealt with music. This guy, and he comes and plugs the microphone back in, and then I just tee off on this dude. Like, I'm just shitting all over him. And he ends up leaving. Like, he leaves. And everyone's laughing at him, which was great. And we go on. So the next day, or it was funny, because, yeah, he goes, I actually don't even know who he is. So the next day, it ends up being Randy Blythe, the lead singer. But he comes up to me, he goes, you're the comedian, right? I go, yeah. He goes, dude, I heard you just decimated my guitar player. He's like, that was, like, I love you for that forever. He goes, we're going to be great friends for that reason alone. And I'm like, oh, cool. And here's the thing. What's interesting about Randy is a very unassuming dude. Seems almost a little bit older in some way.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, wears glasses.
He definitely turns it on when he's playing. Like, it's a different dude. You know,
it's a different dude. Like, I mean, he's like, you know, he was wearing like, you know, like almost like khaki shorts that were like, you know, I don't know. It didn't seem very, but like, so in my mind, I'm like, oh, this guy's in the Lamb of God organization somewhere. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or whatever it is. And then I remember I was like, you know what? Like, this guy's talking to me for the first couple days, like of shows. Like, I'm not seeing Lamb of God just because of the timing of what I have to do. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I should go. The first day I have a chance, I should go watch Lamb of God because this guy's talking to me every day. He's really nice. So I go backstage and go, hey, I'm going to come check you guys out. And what's funny about that is I don't know. I'm like, I'm going to check you guys out, but I don't know what he's going to do. Like, and for all my mind, he might be grabbing a guitar. He might be jumping on the drum kit. He may be a roadie. He may be a manager. I have no idea. And, But right before he goes on stage, he's telling me, he's like, dude, we're going to Portland, Oregon tomorrow. He goes, you gotta, I gotta show you this. They have a bookstore there that's like an entire city block, and they have the best categorizing system of any bookstore I've ever seen. It's just so fantastic, man. You're gonna love it.
You're like, all right, goes, Grandpa, all right, I'm down. What do you want?
He goes, all right, I'll talk to you after the show. He takes off his glasses and goes out there and just starts to do those death growls. And I'm like, oh, he's like a dude. All right.
That's awesome.
You're like, oh, I became friendly with the guy.
So wait a minute, you're buddies with Korn now, right? Like, not...
Yeah. See,
okay. Yeah, I have a crap story about Korn. Again, Denver. Like, anything that I tell you about is probably going to be Denver-centric. I haven't really gone a lot of places, but... We went to Shotgun Willie's one night, and I guess both Limp Bizkit and Korn were playing at the college that weekend. And I met I met Sam Rivers and John Otto, who were fucking awesome dudes, like super nice. Like I play drums, so it was cool to like sit and talk with John Otto. And he's like, yeah, what are you doing? And I'm like, he was just talking to me. It was cool as shit. And then I look over and I see Fieldy and Monkey from Korn, right? And I'm like, oh, right. My God, this is amazing. Like, there's just a few of them hanging around. Well, I understand the context now, but it really bummed me out at the time. I went up to just, you know, kind of say hi and, you know, maybe get a picture or something with Fieldy. And he literally, like, with his hand, like, goes over my handshake, my extended handshake hand, right, and grabs two strippers that were walking up to him behind me. And I didn't know they were behind me, and I didn't know that, like, I'm just in this crossfire of horrors and music, and I feel like he's going to shake my hand, and he goes right over the top of my shit and grabs the both of them, and then they walk back in the back, and I was like, and he didn't say anything, like, no hi, no excuse, like, I was just like, is that kind of a dick move? I don't really know how to feel about it.
He's oddly the only one in the group that was, I had to interview him once, which was just awkward, so I'm not really a good interviewer. But Fuel TV wanted me to interview him when we were on tour, which I thought was kind of weird.
That's weird.
Monkey is a super sweet guy. You know, he's one of the only ones that I guess, like, just looking at, like, keep him on watch once in a while. Sometimes he's like partying, sometimes he isn't. I think I dealt with, like, both on different tours I did with them. But I think he's been, like, sober for a long time. I think he's married and got his shit together really good. He's a really great guy. Jonathan Davis is, like, stone sober, and the new drummer I became very, very cool with. But Fieldy, I remember, like, our first interaction ever was, like, after maybe, like, I mean, a dozen shows at that point we'd done. I saw him backstage today. I was like, hey, Fieldy, I'm Jazz. I thought we should officially meet him. We never had officially met. I go, I'm the comedian on tour with you guys. And he goes, comedian? And just walked away. I was like, all right.
That's a dick move. Shit.
Yeah, he's not a super, super friendly guy, which is weird. He's so super religious. But, you know, and now the original guitarist Head is back in the group, and I really don't know him at all. But we just did a, really probably should have introduced myself more. We just did a cruise ship together. We just did Shiprocked, which I've done for the last 2 years, which was, that's a lot of fun. Doing a metal cruise ship.
What's that like? We've talked about, like, all my crew of people, like, what is that, 70,000 tons of metal, or whatever the fuck they call that one. Like, is that, like, just creepy, or is it awesome? Like, to me, I've been on regular cruises, and I can't imagine being on one with pure metal fans. It seems like a terrible idea to me.
If it's interestingly enough, I couldn't picture it almost any other way now, although... This year we had a big problem. We almost got into a fist fight with the guitar player from 3 Days Grace, which is a whole story.
Hey, wait. Yeah, you got to tell that. Come on.
We told this whole thing on my podcast, Legion Escape. In the British version, we were doing our podcast live on the boat. I don't know who the fucking guitar player from 3 Days Grace is. I have no idea who the guitar player from 3 Days Grace is. I couldn't even tell you what the lead singer looks like. I know a bunch of their songs. I just, you know, it's the band I never really followed.
Right.
And the guy comes over. He's like, why don't you guys shut up and let some music play? And, you know, I thought this guy was just like an audience guy, you know, one of the people on the cruise ship. And I was like, well, fuck off, dude. Like, there's music playing. We're a cruise ship. There's 1,000 other rooms. Like, beat it. And then he's like, fuck you guys, and blah, blah, and then he walks away, and we're just like, you know, so we're like, man, what a faggot, what the fuck's that guy's deal? Like,
we're
and then he comes back over, Then he comes back over and throws wine on us. By the way, he's going to throw it on my friend Dave Smith, another comedian who does my podcast with me. He goes to throw it on Dave Smith, and the other way a wine glass is shaped, I guess. It just, you really can't tell where it's going to go. I feel like I'm the only one who got douched by this wine. Like, it's just like stinging my eyes. It was like... Oh, and then we all jumped up, and we fucking thought security was going to do something, but security didn't do anything. And once we realized security wasn't doing anything, we went after him, and then security jumped in. And then fucking, it was like, it was such an ordeal. Like, and they told us he wanted to apologize, and we went up to him, because I was like, at that point, we were like, I'm going to fight him, we're going to punch him. And we're going to beat him. There was three of us. By the way, I'm not really like I'm going to go kick this guy's ass type of guy, but it was one of those situations that was like it was a no lose. There was three of us. Right, you know what I mean? So I was like, "We're going to be. It's our choice is basically: are we going to go beat the shit out of this guy, or are we going to not? You know?
There's no downside. Might as well do it.
Yeah. At one point, we were like, we're going to go beat the shit out of this guy, and then they tell us that he wanted to apologize. And after talking about it with those guys for a minute, we're like, "All right, fine. If this guy wants to apologize, like some heart, like." You know, they're like, he knows he fucked up and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But it's a bunch of people wearing damage control because he didn't know he fucked up and he didn't care if he fucked up. But we don't know this yet, but we know this when we walk up to him or they walk us over to him. And he's got a face on that does kind of tell the story of, like, it does seem like he's going to still be an asshole, but I'm like, I guess he wants to apologize. And he's like, yeah, come over to this hallway here. So we go off to the hallway where it's quiet. And he's like, so yeah, I'll do the handshake thing if you want. And then we were like, well, we were actually told you were going to apologize. He was like, you guys are running your fucking mouth. You started it right up again. And we're like, what the fuck? And then security all jumped in again. And it was like, what? Why can we just punch this guy? Like, yeah, no one's going to do anything. Yeah. No one's going to do anything. Can we just fucking beat him up? And it was like, it just sucked. That was a shitty situation.
That's funny.
But Shiprock, overall, the thing, you know, whatever. Shiprock told us that 3 days grace would never be on that boat again, so... We'll see how they keep their word on that. But, I mean, beyond that situation, it's been great because that was, you know, the jerk-off band member. Besides that, the people on the boat are all pretty fucking, like, it's pretty great, man. It's much more, like, camaraderie than you think. Like, you know,
sure.
Limited. Like, I can't think of another physical situation that broke out other than the one we were almost in with the guy from the band. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, the audience seems to be totally, totally into it, and they're, it's, you know, it's very drunken, obviously, but it's all up. It makes sense. I couldn't picture going on a cruise ship that was, I feel like I'd be bored on a cruise ship that was just, like, you know, shuffleboard and Mai Tais, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you
would be. But I guess it'd be just like a giant floating metal bar. I never really thought of it that way. But like,
yeah.
Because my first thought when we were talking about doing that, it's like, well, fuck, you get the, you know, the thrash guys with the fucking, you know, FSU dudes, and, like, of course there's going to be problems, but, you know, maybe not. Like, here's another thought, because that shit's not cheap. We went and saw Rammstein.
Especially Shiprock is, like, fucking pretty pricey, actually. They were telling us some of the prices.
I feel like that weeds out some of the horse shit, because, like, we went and saw Rammstein, okay? It's one of my favorite bands. And it was
what band?
Rammstein.
Okay.
It was weird because, like, we were waiting in line, you know, the things around the building, waiting for the doors to open. And we're standing there, and we're like, this is oddly, like, I mean, there's every kind of person, like, you know how metal shows look, but, I mean, we had, like, cosplay chicks, we had, you know, goth dudes, we had these weird, like, you know, Euro trash, like.
We define a term as, like, when you go to a metal show, you're looking at girls, like, a metal 10. Like a real world 7.
Yeah. And then, like, when you see somebody that's like, you see like an actual 10 and you're like, what the fuck are they doing here? You know, like that's what was weird about the Rammstein show.
If you see an actual 10, you know, she has a super muscly boyfriend.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big, huge guy.
She's a muscly boyfriend who likes to work out to metal. That's the only solution.
And then you've got like the actual German contingent where they're wearing like fucking turtlenecks and combat boots, and they're very quiet. And I was like, why isn't this like more of a problem? And what we kind of came to the conclusion with, because we had one single incident the entire night. But everybody was fucking respectful and cool as shit. And like when, you know, Rammstein's very, you know, they're not super up-tempo, like very much beat-driven type of stuff. And it like literally when the show starts, the crowd is just with them, you know, just every bit of it. And we're like, well, you know why? It's because this fucking ticket cost $100. You know, all these jerk-offs that didn't take a shower this morning, they're not here. You know?
Yeah. You know, Rammstein also, you're fine with Rammstein. The same thing I was fine with, I mean, Marilyn Manson had a few more, like, creepy characters, but that was my favorite performer of all time before he became, like, a fat fucking 45-year-old. But Marilyn Manson was, I mean, I was just found him amazing. And him, as we talked about a bunch of times, like, you'll see much more dickheads at, like, a, I'm speaking a little out of school, but, like, if you went to, like, just, like, a Hate Breed show, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Or whatever. So, huh?
That's just funny, because I have a buddy that he runs a club out here, and, like, Hate Breed and Devil Driver and all those guys are, like, they're kind of good buddies. And they're always like, dude, you know, Hate Breed. I'm like, I'm not coming to that show. Like, even though I know half the people.
I think those shows, like, you know, as I lay down, those things, they're hyper-aggressive, where Rammstein is like the same thing that Marilyn Manson has. They put on a very theatrical show. So
yeah.
The thing is, like, at the expense, if you're going to go out there and just, like, you know, try to throw punches in a mosh pit and fucking, you know, like, ram heads with another fucking bald guy, like, there's so much happening on the stage that you kind of want to see, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's coming out on the fucking thing. And I've been to a Rammstein show before, and it's like, yeah, I mean, he's blowing the fire out of the mouth thing, and the, you know, there's this thing that he lights himself on fire, there's lasers everywhere, it's like there's like a DJ play, it's like a, it's a whole thing. It's the same thing, good luck trying to get into a fucking fist fight, or have anyone be like anything other, at like a Tool concert. You know, I mean, it's just too much happening.
Yeah,
like, you want to zone into it.
Yeah, they definitely command your attention. And like the only problem we had one little guy that he decided like right at the start of the show, he was going to try to rush and get to the front, right? Well, at the time I'm dating this chick that like when she goes to shows, like when she's in the mode, like she does not give a fuck. She'll punch a 6-foot tall dude. You know, she'll especially fight chicks like all fucking day. Well, this guy came running up and he kind of gave her a little shot in the ribs, you know, and he went around the front of her and she just fucking winds up and pow, like right in the side of this fucking guy's head. And then he turns around like he's going to do something. And I'm, you know, a lot taller than this guy, not a fighter, but I would have headbutted him to the ground easy. he's standing there and he,
like, I go fire about headbutt a motherfucker.
And, you know, he looks at her and then he sees me and I'm like, it was a bad move, bro. You deserved it. And then he has the balls to fucking pick up his phone, and he puts it right in front of my chick's face, and he's recording the fucking show. And that's when I got pissed off. I'm like, put the phone down, man. Like, you're going to regret not watching this. Like, put the phone down. It's all, you know, watch. Be in the moment, you know?
Dude, that's so true. I love hearing, and a lot of the bands now, like the front man will call that out.
They should.
And they call it, and it's like so interesting, because it's like, whatever happened to, like, fucking, like, just taking in an experience? It's like, everyone's, like, worried about who they're going to show later. It's like, it's not I am, horrible. I'm actually working because it's an unfortunate, necessary thing for what I do.
Right.
You know, for a living. It's like you got to be on that social media and shit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't even, like, over. It's like, you know, it's like, come see my show. It's like, why do you care about, like, you know, like, oh, just crushed a cheeseburger at Outback Steak. You know, it's like, what the shit? Like, why would anybody care about that? But dude, what's weird about that is, like, you go out in the world, like, they do. People do, for some reason, care about it. They do want to know, you know, and then they want to go, oh, I had the burger there. It's awful. You should go to this place for a burger. It's just like,
right.
But I get it. If it makes sense, like, I get it.
No, it's like our whole life is a travel channel. Get, like, We don't actually have to go anywhere to experience it. We can be told, you know, exactly how great or how bad it is, and then be like, oh, okay, we'll file that away and never actually check it out, you know?
Yeah, but it's the experience. It's so, like, when I see that at concerts, man, it's like 1,000 phones up in the air. It's just like, it's like you're they're watching it like through the phone.
Through the phone. Jay, let me tell you something. I flew to fucking New York City, 2010, Madison Square Garden to see Rammstein in their first fucking show back in 10 years. I have 40 right. minutes of fucking like awful phone video. And I came back and I was all excited about it. And then I was sitting there watching all of it. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? Like, I know that I took in yeah. enough of it. Like, I have like actual memories and stuff like that. But I'm like, why the fuck did I do that? And I told my chick when we went to the next one, I go, look, let's take a couple pictures. Just, you know, whatever. Like, when the big, you know, foam squirting dick comes around, like, you know, take a picture of that. And, but then just watch.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny? They give you so many, like, opportunities too. You know, a band like Korn, which I found was pretty neat, especially now with the original guitar player back.
Yeah,
it's such a cool thing. Like, they do a lot of they give you rock star poses so you can do your thing. You know,
yeah.
Like they always give you that moment. Like, you know, in between like songs, there's like just kind of like overhead, like, you know, noise, kind of ambient noise playing, and they just kind of backlight the whole stage and. They just all sit there with their dreads hanging and just standing there and, like, let the crowd get, you know, like, just start cheering and applauding. And it's like, that's your moment. Like, start snapping your pictures and shit. You know, there's your cool picture.
Man, we saw Metallica.
Going to music, man. Like, feel that music. That the concert experience, man, is one thing, like...
Fucking, yeah. You know what?
You know, the movie. It's why the movies will never die, you know? It's like everyone says, like, you can watch everything... online and all that, you know, you can anything, you know, you can find movies in the theaters, you can find them online, you can find pretty good copies of them online, but the point is, like, don't you want to see some of this stuff, like, you know, like...
Well, we saw Metallica in Denver, and, like...
I have no real interest in seeing the new RoboCop movie, but if I see it, I'm just going to see it in the theater, like,
yeah.
While I watch that, I'm like, you got to see that in the theater. Gravity, you know, you had to see Gravity in the theater.
Now, I'm going to watch that on my iPhone, I think it'll be good. no, let me tell you this. Like, we saw Metallica down open for him, and, you know, Philip Anselmo, I mean, come on, legendary dude.
Sure. Yep.
He stopped right in front of us, and, you know, he's looking right at me, and he's like, I'm staring right back at myself, you know, like, and I'm doing it back to him, you know, and I'm screaming the shit back to him, and, like, as soon as the lyric was done, like, I swear to God, he looked at me, and he, like, pumped his empty fist at me. Like, fuck yeah, you know? And I was like, holy right. fuck. And, like, my chick, she's like, did you see that? And I'm like, yeah, I saw that. And it was one of the coolest shit ever, you know? Like, yeah.
That Pantera. Dude, I looked out so much. I got to fucking hang out with Pantera. Like, Craig Gass is a comedian. And when I first started doing comedy, when I first started coming to New York to do comedy, I met Craig. And he's just like, at the time, I think I actually have more connections at this point now, maybe, from doing these tours. Maybe not, right. but Craig had this cool kind of, like, back door into this whole world of you know, concerts and stuff. Like, you could just call him and be like, hey, you going to Pantera next week? And he'd be like, yeah, let's go. And he would just bring you, you know?
That's cool.
And he brought me backstage to a Pantera concert. Yeah, getting to hang out with those guys. I mean, it was like, that was it. It was the reinventing the steel. It was the last tour they did before they broke up, yeah. And I got to see him at a Hammerstein Ballroom.
Ah, what a great room.
In New York City, which is just a small venue. It's like, it was really, you know, he had Phil and someone had the long hair, a big grizzly beard. Like, he looked awesome. It was really, really, really cool, you know, and to see that, you know, especially after the thing with, like, Dimebag, everything happened, you know, so.
Yeah.
It was, that was a cool moment. I was really happy I got a chance to see that. My friend Louis J. Gomez, like, the other guy I do my podcast with, he's a huge Pantera fan growing up. I wasn't a huge fan growing up, but I got into them more, like, when I was, like, an adult, you know, almost an adult teenager.
I'll never forget, like, we were cleaning carpet in Aspen. It was my first job. I was like 17 years old, and my buddy that I was working with, he's like, you got to check this out. He's like, I know you're not really into thrash, but listen to this. And he pops in Cowboys from Hell, but he goes all the way to the Sleep at the end.
Yeah.
And I mean, instantly, and I'm like, holy fuck, this is, and that, like, being the drummer, that's, I don't know what about that, I'm trying to think of the song in my head and I can't think of it, but the drums in that song for some reason got it for me, and I was like, from then on I was in. I never heard of him before that, though. I was pretty sheltered musically until I was pretty old, so.
Yeah, it's funny, what's interesting is, like, I'm the opposite of sheltered musically. It's like, I run the gamut, so it's like, what I think people find so bizarre, and maybe also endearing, is that, like, my iPod, like, can go from, you know, I love having just hitting shuffle on a road, you know, driving on the road, and just, like, seeing where it goes, because it will jump from Pantera to Barbra Streisand to, you know, Betty Davis Eyes and some 80s song, and then, you know, right back to, like, Lamb of God, and it's like all, you know, Garth Brooks. It's like, it's all over the place, because I genuinely do have an affection for, you know, a guy who eats a lot of shit for being kind of like corny or a wigger or whatever they call him is Kid Rock. But Kid Rock, I find to be very interesting. First of all, very big talent. He's a wildly talented guy. And also just like, it's hard to hear a guy who like really speaks to exactly what you kind of know and you are. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. To me, it's like I am, he's a little older than me, obviously, but he's, I completely hear what he's saying. You know, it's like he has those songs where you even kind of list it off. It's like he just grew up with all this influence. I kind of grew up myself like a relatively black neighborhood, so it's kind of dominated by, like, you know, like everyone wanted to hear like hip hop and stuff. But my instincts from my stepbrothers I had at the time were like they were listening to like Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden and stuff like that, and so I would listen to that, and then I was like, you know, I would listen to the rap music because that's what all my friends were listening to, and then my mom just kind of listened to, like, Top 40, and, you know, and whenever, I didn't really have, like, I was never really set off to music. I was never really, like, ew. You know, the only thing I was, maybe Clinton music was the only thing I was, like, shut off to.
Right.
And to this day, it's probably still my least favorite type of music, but I at least know enough to be able to know it's like, well, I can't just make a blanket statement that it all sucks, and so there's a couple of fantastic country songs, you know, but, like, sure. It's definitely not my genre, but, like, it is all over. So it's like Kid Rock's a fun guy to watch perform and do that because, you know, his roots in music are like, you know, he had Kid and Play hair and used to, like, you know, break dance and do all that shit. But what's so cool now is watching that hybrid, like, you watch a guy come to, like, you know, fruition, like with that comfort in his own skin. You know, I kind of get that a lot in comedy. I think people, what they like about my comedy, if they like it, I guess, is, I'm very comfortable in my own skin now. I just learned what it is I try to do comedically, and I hope that I'll get better and better. I don't think I've, you know, I've hit any kind of peak at all, I hope, but it's like, I far from think I'm the end-all, be-all of comedy, but I think I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I know what's funny about me. I know how to use that. I know how to, like, uniquely, like, speak in my voice. You know what I mean?
Well, let me...
And that's why, what's cool about watching Kid Rock now is watching Kid Rock still do some of the rap influence, where I see him. I just saw him at Sturgis Bike Week this year. I was hosting a TV show out there,
right?
And he did a big performance. And now it's kind of cool watching him go up there, you know, looking like a rock star, you know, like very much like a, you know, like a rock and roll musician. But then going up there and, you know, puts a cigar in his mouth and does like the, you know, the scratching shit with the DJ right. Setup.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of cool. It makes it almost way more cool to watch it like this. It's like, he knows he's doing like, he just sang like a country song, two songs before that, and a, you know, and then a ballad, and then he did a rap song, and then he's doing like this. You know, I just think it's kind of cool, like, to just know yourself that well, you know what I mean? And it's comfortable doing all of it. And the crowd takes that journey, too, because it's not just Bike Week. You're hard-pressed to find anybody there who really wants to hear somebody do DJ music, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
but definitely. He pulled it off, you know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let me steer this a different way because obviously you're an amazing comedian. Are you familiar with the Stand in New York City?
Comedy Club?
Yeah, I'm just messing with you. Do you know one Patrick Millian?
I do. Yeah,
I had him on here, and by the way, I ate shit on that one because I was totally nervous with him too. I don't know why, but. Totally ruined that interview. I asked him, I asked him, you know, who's the fucking problem coming up? Like, who's the guy that's like next in line to really be awesome? And he said, Big J Oakerson.
You think it's going to be a problem?
No, like in a good way. Like, who's the next guy that's going to be like, who's going to hit and be amazing? And he said you.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah, it's really. Patrick's been good to me, man. Yeah, I worked that club a whole lot, which is cool, man. I knew Patrick Smith even before the club. You know, they just used to do the cringe humor shows and the website.
Right.
Yeah, Patrick's been very, very good to me, man. Hey, you know what? I hope so, man. I put in, like, you know, there's a lot of people who put in a lot more work, but I've been doing this now for at least 15 years, maybe closer to 16 even, I think. But, you know, me and Kurt Metzger and Kevin Hart, we all started in Philly together. A few weeks apart. I think I started first. I think Ken started like 3 weeks later, and I think Kurt started like 2 months later. And we all kind of became friendly enough, and, you know, Kev, obviously, his rocket kind of took off right away. He never even really moved to New York. He went right from Philly to L.A., and, you know, started getting, like, pilots and all this kind of stuff. And me and Kurt went to New York and kind of just grinded it out and worked the club scene for a while, and now it's just like, you know, it's like the payoff came, like, that we both kind of, like, really put our guts in the stand-up and kind of, like, we came out, you know, Kurt's now a writer for Amy Schumer show and a bunch of stuff. He's got an hour special coming out. I'm in talks for an hour special at Comedy Central or Netflix, and we'll do one of those too. And, you know, it comes, but, like, you know, it's funny when you take that path, and you say you have friends that are kind of, like, you know, doing it. When you take that path of kind of straight stand-up comedy, it's interesting, you know, because, like, it really, There's downtime where you're kind of like, oh, fuck, man, like, I might not, like, it might not ever happen, you know, I might not ever make a living where I can, like, you know, buy a home and stuff like that.
Right.
Doing this, but it's, you know, if you're tenacious enough and stick with it, like, this last year has been, like, you know, one of my better years with doing, like, you know, Ari Shaffir's, I assume?
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, Ari put me, he fought for me for Comedy Central to put me on this storytelling thing he does. And I did it, and I went at the end of the whole thing, which was, like, you know, after, like, you know, celebrities, basically. I closed it out after it was, like, Joe Rogan and David Koechner and all these people.
Wow.
And I had a really good showing on that. And then I opened for June Jeffries at Carnegie Hall.
Nice.
Which was, like, I think they sent me out there trying to just, like, you know, same thing as this. You take those Mayhem Fest skills kind of come into play because they send me out of Carnegie Hall while people are filing in. Basically, just to, you know, they send you out there almost like to be like time filler and just like you know,
warm up guy kind of.
Just let them know, yeah, you know, people come. And what was really cool about that, particularly, was they didn't expect me to do any kind of good, and Jim Jeffries actually didn't come. Like, I didn't introduce Jim Jeffries. Like, when I would have done, it was a 10-minute intermission, and then Jim Jeffries came on.
Okay.
And so the reaction I got at the end of my, like, I was able to, like, get them, like, not only did they start, when I started, they were filing in. When I was done, you could hear a pin drop in between the laughs, you know? Like, I caught the audience really good. And, you know, I picked my audience right. Like, you know, Jim Jeffries has a crowd that would like me, you know?
Sure, yeah. Are there any guys
with David Tell?
Are there any guys that, like, you still, like, not starstruck's not really the right word, but, like, any comedians that you're like, holy shit, like, you're really excited to get to see or get to work with?
You know, it's funny. I don't think that I am ever. And then you realize that I remember we just did the Patrice O'Neill benefit show,
right?
Like 2 weeks ago, and it was a. You know, it was Bill Burr puts together, so it was like me, Bill, and Colin Quinn, and Dane Cook, and all these people. Like, I was probably the smallest dog of the group, right?
I caught you on O&A that morning when all you guys were.
Yeah, we were talking about, right. And, you know, and it was, and the show fucking went, like, I went out first, and it went fucking fantastic. But when I was there, the night before that, I was hosting at the, I was on stage. And Jerry Seinfeld came in, and he wanted to go next. Like, he was going to go after me.
Shit.
So he was listening from the hallway. And I've seen Jerry Seinfeld, like, dozens of times at this point throughout my career. Like, he pops in a lot, you know?
Right.
And but we never had like too many conversations. He's not very like, you know, outwardly. I wouldn't say he knows my name at all or anything like that. But Colin Quinn told me the night of the Patrice roast that when I got off stage that night before, that Seinfeld was asking about me.
Oh shit!
And just basically saying like, you know, oh, who's that guy? I guess he was pretty funny or whatever, you know. And,
right.
And Colin said he told me. Colin said he told him who I was and everything. And he just kind of like, you know, like, oh, cool. But and again, as minimal, that means nothing, and it's not going anywhere particularly. But I just thought it was because you know you're like, yeah, it's fine. So who gives a shit? Like if I had a friend with me who was like losing their shit about that, I'm like, all right, relax. It's just a fucking dude. But when Colin Quinn goes, hey, should I have asked him about you? I'm like, what did he say? Did he say I was ready?
That is badass.
You become a fan immediately. Like, of wow, course. Can
yeah. That's fucking cool. I mean, I'm a nobody still. Like, I mean, I've been doing this thing, and like, you're definitely one of the bigger names I've talked to. I've had a few cool people on here and stuff, but you know, every once in a while, when you hear something, you know, even if it's just like a ham and egger kind of person, you're like, oh, really? Like, they actually checked it out? That's cool, you know.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff going around with now that Jay Moore has his own sports radio show. There's been some little, you know, shots fired across the bow, and kind of makes you feel cool. Like you get a tweet here and there, and like that's to me, like I still really freak out. Like when I got on the phone with you, I literally was sitting here shaking. Like I need to get my shit together and talk to this man. But you know, just it's cool, and that's cool for you, Jerry Seinfeld. Hell yeah. I wanted to ask you. Okay, I'm gonna be honest with you. Like I have so much weird prep questions, and some of them don't make any sense. Some of them sort of do, and I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I have one question about something that came up on your podcast, and this is sure. Weird. You guys were talking about being with a chick and then like having to like fight for her honor in a certain situation. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was like the last one or second to last one. You guys were talking about how like some chick got yelled at that you were with, and everybody was like,
"Yeah, that was we were at a we were at a UFC event, and yeah, it was a girl who I think Lewis, I think he was like fucking her at one point, but not even anymore. they were just friends at this point, and she came down. We were going to a ironically enough, this is before I'd ever done Mayhem Fest. We always do a thing called we would do this thing called White Boy Weekend. We called it where we were just." And by the way, there wasn't even, I think, one a black guy with us, and every year we have Lewis, who's Puerto Rican. Right. But we just call it White Boy Weekend because it's just such like a white event that we do. We would always go to, we just call it White Boy Day. That was the first time we did White Boy Weekend, but it was, it's always just us going to Mayhem Fest, usually is what it was. That's why I said it's kind of neat that I ended up getting on Mayhem Fest, because we always went to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of a neat thing for all of us. So we were having White Boy Weekend that year because it worked out the Mayhem Fest and the UFC event were like back in back days in Philly.
Okay.
So we got a hotel room down there, and like we went to Mayhem Fest, and the next day this girl came down because she wanted to see the UFC event. She's a fan of UFC.
Sure.
And Lewis, like I said, Lewis, I think, used to fuck her a few years back. And we don't know her. Like, she's, you know, we're friendly enough for there, but we're not, like, you know, diehard friends or any kind of way. And, but she's going, the weirdest thing, like, we were in this, again, like, too much testosterone is flying around, those kind of things, like, almost like a Mayhem Fest, like, a UFC event. And it's in Philly, which is just, like, you know, I'm from Philly, so I know it's just the fucking worst people sometimes. And so there's, like, all super aggressive blue-collar maniacs who want to fight a lot, you know.
Tap-out shirts and shit.
And Lewis said something, and Lewis is a hothead, too, so it's just this weird aggressive standoff, you know, where it's, like, the guy's some drunk, like, a smart guy in the group, too, like, a guy who'd be like, fuck this jerk-off normal, you know?
Right.
Was like, you know, Lou said something funny to me, and the guy looked back and he goes, not funny. And Lewis was like, you know, well, I wasn't saying it for you, jerk off, you know? And the guy's like, what? And then, you know, of course, his buddy said, what? He's going to do a fucking problem? And then we're all in each other's face.
I like how you guys cause all those problems when you guys hang out together. getting in all these fucking fights.
Yeah, but it's like, but here's the thing. I swear to you, none of us want to fight.
Well, Audacity fucked us again. Shit. Hate to do this to you people, but I thought I'd finish the story up. Something happened with the recording at the last bit, so... basically, the story ends with those the two dudes and Jay and his friends standing there, and they turn around and they say, "Fuck you and fuck that fat bitch too." And apparently, they just like all stood there going, "Like, when are you guys gonna take that?" You know, defending the honor of the female friend. He did say she was cool about it. Didn't expect anybody to step up to that, and good thing because nobody did apparently. I did tell another story, but I'm not going to rehash it. We'll save it for another podcast about, apparently being, I was called out on not defending somebody's honor, but I think she was being a total bitch. So, whatever. We'll tell that another time. He had to go, he was going to the gym, but he was fucking great. And, hopefully we'll have him back on again. So apologize for the cutoff, folks, but, hopefully we got enough for you that you enjoyed the show. So, have a great Metal Monday. See you soon.